This is KTOO. The Juneau School District Board of Education is fast-tracking a move to restore universal free breakfast for K-12 students. This comes after lawmakers overrode an education funding veto and restored more than $1.5 million to the district. The board typically considers action items over two meetings before approval. Board members officially took up the breakfast program during a special meeting Wednesday so that they can approve the program at the next regular meeting on September 9. The board didn't include universal free breakfast in this school year's budget. It added staff positions and paid off deficits instead of restoring the program during its last budget revision in July as well. The district estimates the program will cost nearly $250,000 this school year. Member Emil Mackey supports the program, but he says the district needs to find a way to get more families to apply for free and reduced lunch so the district can be reimbursed for some of the costs.
I realize some of that might philosophically fall against the idea of universal free breakfast. But what I don't want to happen is for us to fall into an unsustainability trap in the future and have to make this hard choice again.
Member Steve Whitney says that when the district began the program, making breakfast free for everyone helped to encourage more students who already qualified for free and reduced meals to participate without judgment.
To try to get around these, the amount of staff and effort, and try to make it secret so kids weren't embarrassed, it turned out to be cheaper just to make it universal free breakfast.
The board is expected to vote to restore the program at its next regular meeting on September 9. In the meantime, students will continue to pay full price for breakfast unless they qualify for free and reduced meals. The roadless rule is on the chopping block again. The rule protects more than half of the Tongass National Forest from road development. Now, tribes and environmental groups in Southeast are strategizing to keep it in place. A host of Alaska Native communities in Southeast Alaska, which rely on the Tongass National Forest for their food and culture, say they want to make the roadless rule permanent. Tlingit advocate Hauch Tla Yolanda Fulmer presented one tactic at the Southeast Tribal Environmental Forum in Juneau this week. She explained how a bill that was reintroduced to the U.S. House of Representatives this summer, called the Roadless Area Conservation Act, or RACA, could codify the roadless rule once and for all.
The current situation is a political struggle between the proposed repeal of the roadless rule and the introduction of RACA. The outcome of RACA will determine the future protection of vital national forest lands, including the Tongass.
She says that if the bill passes into law, it could end the political ping pong between promoting extractive industries and preserving traditional foods and practices in national forests.
Road construction often leads to logging, mining, forest fires, and development which fragments ecosystems. The roadless rule helps maintain intact forests, streams, and shorelines where traditional foods thrive.
The roadless rule has flip-flopped multiple times since it was established to protect undeveloped lands in 2001. It was rolled back during Trump's first term before being reinstated in 2023 by former President Joe Biden. The proposed rollback aligns with Trump's executive order earlier this year to end a ban on constructing roads in undeveloped areas of the forest. And the USDA's announcement comes on the heels of Representative Nick Begich's visit to Juneau, where he said that he supports the expansion of logging in the Tongass National Forest.
This is something I hear from folks in from Ketchikan all the way up to Yakutat on a regular basis. How do we bring timber back?
Tribal leaders at the forum in Juneau spoke to the value of keeping the forest ecosystem intact. Joel Jackson is president of the Organized Village of Cake on Kupernoff Island. He says it's vital to keep the forest healthy, in part because the salmon that feed his tribe rely on it. Old-growth trees shade the streams, making the water cold enough for salmon to swim up.
If the stream isn't cool enough, those fish aren't going to be able to spawn.
After the fish spawn, they die, and their decaying bodies feed the forest with nutrients they gathered at sea. Then the cycle continues. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced Wednesday that the public can comment on the proposed rollback from Friday through September 19. Nathan Newcomer advocates for the Tongass with the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. He worries that the USDA won't listen to the public's wishes to keep the rule in place.
We know what they're going to do. They're not going to listen to anybody, but we still need to get on the record and make it sure and clear that people in Southeast Alaska and across the nation want to see the roadless rule kept in place.
When the first Trump administration rolled back the roadless rule in 2020, people had about 90 days to comment, and nearly all of the public comments were in favor of keeping the rule. Newcomer says that he's organizing quickly since the federal government has expedited the public process to allow for less than a month of public comment. Kate Glover is an attorney at Earth Justice, an environmental law firm that has challenged past rescissions of the roadless rule on behalf of tribes, conservation nonprofits, tourism, and fishing groups. She says a few weeks is not enough time for a meaningful public process.
It doesn't allow time for the agency to meet its obligation to consult with tribes on a government-to-government basis. Typically, at least 120 days is needed for that.
She says she had not seen such short comment periods before this administration. The public comment period opens Friday. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon. Alaska Native filmmaker and artist Mary Goddard is in Haines conducting a museum collection study and filming part of a documentary. The film features her eating only Native foods for 3 months. KHNS's Trigvi Backey sat down with Goddard to hear her story.
Mary Goddard is from Sitka and owns her own film company, Midnight Run LLC. She also sells artwork and jewelry online. She's currently in Haines conducting a museum collection study at the Shell Museum.
So what that entails is meeting up with the curator. So I've been chatting with Michaela, and we've been looking through the online catalog to see what is exactly in the collections. And then with her help, she pulls any objects that I want to see out and lays it out on a table so that I can examine it, take photos, sketch it if I'd like to.
Goddard is also here to film part of her new documentary, 90 Day Native.
It's really a challenge for me to eat only what I can fish, forage, or hunt for 90 days, or basically any food that is off the land in Alaska.
Currently, it is week 10 of her challenge, with another 3 weeks to go. Goddard still has some goals in the challenge that she wants to complete.
So I'm hoping to get in a deer hunt. I'm hoping to find some cloudberries. And I would love to forage for some more high bush cranberries.
With the challenge comes some pitfalls. Small ones, like always having a camera on you, to bigger ones, like sugar withdrawals and your body going into ketosis. That's when you burn fat for energy instead of glucose.
I think the hardest so far, and I think I keep having these benchmarks where I'm like, that's definitely the hardest. But was this last week, my doctor said to consume more calories. So I've been trying to consume more calories, but literally right after that doctor's appointment, when she said, you know, be counting your calories, try to consume more, literally had no appetite.
Dave Fedorsky is Goddard's cameraman and business partner, who says there were some hard filming days where energy was low, and even some doubt of being able to complete the challenge.
Of course, everyone loves filming the happy moments, the victories, the successes. Oh, I have my act together today and I feel great. Let's go turn the camera on and film whatever it is, you know, whether it's, you know, fishing or something. But it's the really bad days, and we knew that Mary would be experiencing some of these, that the bad days are part of a story. It's an important part of a story.
However, Goddard is persevering and is optimistic about finishing the challenge strong and is thankful for everything that it has brought to her life.
I think the biggest thing that will be gone is like that sense of urgency that all the food has to come from the land. But I would love to be incorporating all of the food that I harvest into my daily diet. I would like to keep it as clean as possible.
She's excited to share her experience, but is still looking forward to treating herself to some guilty pleasures.
One thing that I might kind of go back to is just because I haven't been able to shake it yet is I really enjoy a good cup of coffee. And I would imagine maybe incorporating a little bit of that back in.
Goddard is still looking for sponsors to help fund the documentary and is reaching out to potential partners. She's continuing to post updates online, on her social media and websites. The final day of her challenge is September 21st. In Haines, I'm Trigvi Backey.
A federal trial began Monday in Anchorage for a class action lawsuit against the Alaska Office of Children's Services, or OCS. The lawsuit is on behalf of all kids in OCS custody. Marsha Lowry is an attorney and director of a national nonprofit advocating for foster care reforms. She says they're helping with this lawsuit because Alaska's foster system has some of the worst outcomes in the country.
They have a very, very high maltreatment rate. They do not have the kids visited every month. That's a federal requirement. Children have to be visited, because how else can you know whether a child is safe when you put a child in a foster home?
The complaint alleges OCS caseworkers have too many cases to be able to adequately serve families. It also alleges that the agency has failed to place Alaska Native foster children in culturally appropriate placements. OCS Director Kim Guay also took the stand Monday. She said all OCS employees are working to make positive changes in the system and that the agency has taken steps to increase recruitment and improve training. Margaret Patton Walsh is Assistant Attorney General for the state and defending OCS in the trial. She says running the foster care system in Alaska is challenging.
It's especially hard in Alaska because of the size and the remoteness of so many of the communities, and we are doing the best that we can to manage the challenges that we have. And there are definitely challenges. Nobody is denying that. And I think critically in this context, we have a very, very severe caseworker shortage.
Guay also repeatedly pointed out on the stand that OCS is only one piece of the child welfare system. The trial is expected to take 3 weeks. You are listening to KTOO, and I am Alex Solomon. Right now, it is 74 degrees Fahrenheit, and it is sunny. The humidity is at 50%. Tomorrow, it will be about the same, 68 degrees and sunny. And Sunday, we're seeing more of the same, but clouds might start coming in.